people trying to stop smoking traditional cigarettes. According to Texas's health department, e-cigarettes have been the most popular tobacco product for minors.
Where's your Panther? Coming at you straight from Wave Farm.
WGXC, Acra, 90.7 The Beat.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes when Federico Durand cuts analog tape the old-fashioned way. Teresa Wong plays her cello through a scary, scary night. And Alvin Lussier misdirects us to the beat of a non-existent drummer. Deep Threes. Music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Setho of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Hello and welcome to the Singularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from the Tourist Brainwashing and Fluid Exchange Facility of the Catskill Makers Syndicate, located at 65 West Bridge Street in the heart of Catskill, also known as that weird place right next to the Juice Branch. We are here to answer any science or technology-related questions you may have. Please contact us at catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com or directly at a website, www.thingularity.tech. That is thingularity.tech. I say a website because we have an expansive collection of them. And now, tonight's members and guests, please sound off.
Hi, I'm Cody.
Albert.
Kurt.
Jill.
Corey.
I am Mr. Conductor, and next to me, as always, is Brian, our sound technician.
Yay!
All right. And here it is, turn of the year now. It's things
Happy
rolling
New year.
Along. Happy New Year to everybody out there.
Happy New Year.
Unless you're Chinese, then it's a couple months.
True, that's true. And it's like the year 4,000 something, I think.
And we'll try to remember when that rolls around. but as for now, all the people looking at the Julian calendar will just say, Happy New Year. And
Well, no, because all of our AliExpress orders will be delayed.
Yeah, so instead of 6 weeks, it'll be 8 weeks?
or 2 days.
Big difference.
So get those orders in before everybody over there starts partying on your dime. Hey, look, just because they're slaves doesn't mean they don't get a break.
Wow.
Oh, my Lord. You know, actually, I heard that they're actually paid pretty well over there now. Mm-hmm. They're not going for a bowl of rice a day anymore.
So they stopped committing suicide at the Foxconn factories?
I'm sure the rate's a little higher than most other factories.
Yeah, they're having labor is gaining power over there finally.
They got some skills that the rest of the world lacks.
Yeah.
Okay, now how do they export that over to Hong Kong?
Maybe they'll be able to take down the suicide nets.
Oh, Lord. Wow.
Why?
Why? I know.
Happy New Year.
It couldn't last long with this bunch of cynics.
And that's all right, everybody. That is the Maker starting out on a positive note for your 2020. 2020. We're going to be making some vision jokes with that. I know it.
Yeah, I've heard several already.
What's that?
It's 20. You know, vision is 2020.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Wow.
We'll find out in November, I guess, if we learned anything or see clearly.
If we have some good vision for everyone.
Mm.
Does our leadership have good vision? Mm.
Or is it going to be another Ultron?
Another Ultron.
Dude, I'm voting Ultron. Okay, now, being the Thingularity radio program, aiming to try to answer people's questions, we do have lines that are open. The lines that I mentioned, the catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com and the thingularity.tech website, are available all the time. So if anybody has any questions and you're listening to us perhaps in an off-hour time, because we broadcast at 7 p.m. on the first Thursday of every month. If you're listening to us some other time than that, you can still drop your questions to our contact points. We will hold on to them and we will answer them in the next episode.
Heck, you can even join the channel where the questions get dropped. Go to, where is it, Brian?
There's a thing on Thingularity.tech.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's also on Thingularity.tech where you can just join up if you're so inclined to install Telegram,
yes,
the app on your phone.
Should anybody actually venture over to www.thingularity.tech, you will see a way to actually send us a message directly from the webpage or join us for an interactive chat. Mm-hmm. Well, the latter's preferred, but if you want to be anonymous and just ask a question, you could just drop it through the website. Okay, now, that being said, have there been any questions from the last episode?
Well, sort of. This first one is from Aaron Benjamin Watson of Ulster. Want to see the new works of art. If you could maybe expand on what you mean by that.
Yes, please. We don't know what.
Okay, apparently
about.
The cryptic messages being dropped into our channel are a little less understood than we would like. So, any extra data on that, Aaron, if you could get a hold of us, even through the same means, drop back to the website, even right now, we will let you know whatever we can tell you. But we need to know what those works of art are.
Sure. I've got an eye on Telegram right now. We have one from Chris R. of Copake. If we did settle on Mars, how would the gravity and other factors affect a fetus and growing child? How would it affect human evolution in the long run?
It would cost a lot of money.
That's one expensive baby.
That's an expensive baby.
Well, I don't think we know precisely how that would affect the baby, but...
Biologically speaking.
The gravity is somewhat similar, right? It's about 0.8 or 0.9?
No, on Mars, it's 0.4.
It's 1/6.
It's only 0.4. Okay, much less than I thought.
On the moon, it's 1/6. On Mars, it's
1/6.
About 2/5.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that ain't too bad. So you're only going to be 2/5 deformed.
Probably bone density and things like that would be a lot less. I think that's the fear. That seems to be what happens to astronauts who spend a long time, like, on the space station.
Yeah. And by long time, we don't mean a lifetime. We mean
we mean like 6 months, and your spinal cord stretches 3 inches.
Days.
Yeah,
yeah, at max. Things like that, and you lose bone density, and certain biological functions aren't quite the same.
Your eyeballs change shape
and
permanently.
The newly discovered blood clot issues they're having with astronauts.
Yeah, so
is that in microgravity, or is that like...
So that's in microgravity.
Yeah.
Okay.
What we're talking about is basically all the things that we have seen happening to people aboard the ISS, the space station.
Right, because our only point of reference is astronauts.
Okay, so but Mars may or may not have that same effect.
That is correct. We don't have experiment bays on Mars to test it out yet.
It might be.
Yeah, probably wouldn't be as
to a lesser degree.
Yeah, because there's some amount of gravity as opposed
It's still a fairly low fraction of the Earth's gravity.
Mm. I think it's enough to affect you. I didn't realize that it was so low. Because its diameter isn't 60% less. Or, I mean, its overall volume isn't 60% less, but it's...
It's not the volume, it's the mass.
It's less mass of materials, less
is it?
That's correct.
In the core. Hmm.
Yeah, that's because its core's already, like it's less dense. Its core's already cooled off. That's part of the reason it's lost its magnetic field and everything is being stripped off the surface. And just for some sort of positive note for microgravity exposure, Carl Sagan was correct in his prediction that low gravity would affect cancer positively. It does slow it right down in a lot of cases that we're starting to see.
So, interesting. So, you know, I guess let's say they figured out how to put an atmosphere on Mars. Would that...
Would that
so we
out?
Send cancer patients to Mars and the moon colonies.
Sure.
I mean, you'd be able to breathe.
What?
Air. She was asking if you put an actual atmosphere on Mars.
Now, would that affect, you know, maybe the radiation too entering the planet?
Putting the atmosphere on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That would be
our atmosphere is what shields us big time from, like, dying, like, every day horribly over and over because of the cosmic rays and the UV coming from our own sun.
So step one is terraforming big comets and crashing them into Mars.
I wouldn't even start there. I would start at how do you basically reform the magnetic field of an entire planet.
That's what you want to do first is set up the shields to protect whatever you put there.
Without Earth's magnetic field,
it's just
the atmosphere would be blown away.
Yep.
It would be turned into ozone and then blown away.
Wow.
We wouldn't be able to keep it in its current chemical state, its composition.
Well, maybe also start researching artificial gravity.
Well, yeah.
That would actually solve a lot of problems because then we could just drop an atmosphere on it. The atmosphere would become its own protective shell. Life would be easily seeded on such a planet. That life could then generate all the O2 that would be needed for, say, us. But because the gravity's low, you're going to have less of everything. Every component of the atmosphere is going to be less. Less nitrogen, less oxygen, less CO2. So you're not going to be having any sort of like Olympics comparable to that on Earth there. It's going to be like a kid with asthma on the right on the coast being able to run really fast. But no. Then you go up into like the Rockies and then the kid like just stumbles and like chokes because there's a lot less
O2. Martian athletes will be out of this world.
Oh, wow. Oh, there you go.
Oh, happy 2020, everybody.
How punny.
Yeah. No, we had to get there somewhere. We had to get there at some point.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
We also had a special request from Anubis to at least touch on some wireless and security topics on the Thingularity portal.
Wireless insecurity. Please elaborate.
Like wireless interconnectivity.
IoT.
So, IoT stuff, you know, simple small office, home office routers,
Was there a question floated?
No, not specifically. But we do have some news.
So talk about some IoT stuff. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
It's bad for you.
Yeah, I don't.
Wise was just breached. That was another. I saw some of those in Home Depot. Wyze. Wyze.
Oh.
It's a security camera saves your videos to the cloud. But the company had a really bad response to the incident. They were saying, "Oh, well, just some employee changed some, you know, permissions or something." They didn't go into details. I'm assuming it's a Linux server, and they left something open to the world in permissions from transferring files from a dev server over to live. But they were using actual live data on the development site.
Uh-huh.
And so somebody found
live data.
A couple million...
Live private data.
Yeah.
Oh.
Nice.
Oh.
And so,
not so nice.
And what's typical of a lot of these companies when they get caught is they don't... It's always an employee or it's these bad hackers or whatever. But there must be a culture of just terrible practice from the management. Because why would a new employee even be capable of leaving a server wide open like that?
Or even getting access to sensitive data to do his development work on.
Exactly.
Like, use fake data. It's
use
not that hard
data.
To generate.
Use fake data. Don't, you know,
no, it'd be called the honeybot.
Build security into the, just as part of the culture of the company.
Yeah, you see,
that's what's
be,
lacking.
That's a security tactic that has to be put in place by somebody that actually kind of knows what they're doing and knows how to anticipate an attack.
Maybe all these IoT companies being at having all these venture capital at the reins of these IoT companies is a bad thing. Because then they're beholden to money. And security, it's not exactly profitable.
No, but...
As long as you don't get caught.
It's like medicine. It's a lot more profitable to treat the patient than to cure it.
Ooh, there you go.
But this is how regulation works also, is you make it economically unviable by meaningful fines, say. If we're going to say, you know, it's unlikely, it's not profitable... Then you have to make it unprofitable by holding CEOs accountable, not giving them golden parachutes when
actual
their company
punitive
goes under
rulings.
Yeah, don't you know? You fine Facebook $800 million for security breach, but they're worth several hundred billion dollars
it's
or something.
Still so it's still like, pocket change to them.
It's nothing, right? If you fine $800 million, but they made $2 billion worth of advertising money or whatever, however they make money, then they still made $1.2 billion of profit. After finding them $800 million, you know, so it doesn't.
It just becomes a part of
it
doing business.
The cost of doing business. Yep. You calculate that into the cost of doing business, and then charge a little bit extra so that you can pay the fine when you get caught.
The only problem with that model is if you were a smaller company in the same field, then the same type of fines would utterly cripple you.
It does. That's true. Yeah. That is a true, and it's a good point.
So perhaps the fine should be on a sliding scale based on product and profit.
Yeah, oh, definitely, and scope.
Percentage of
profit,
percentage of total capital assets, something like that.
Yeah, correct.
Maybe they should find it on the evil quotient.
Oh, the evil quotient.
Oh, so they base it on the CEO's pay scale?
No, they're just CEO's moral standing. Let's have
his Christmas bonus.
Technology Taliban.
Oh, my God.
Somebody was trying to do that. It was called, like, People or something. It got a bunch of backlash. This was last year, maybe in the summertime. Do you know about this, Julie?
The social media thing where you rate people?
Yes. It was
you rate people,
then you get a social score based on whatever. It could be a business, like, oh, you came and you were a good plumber. But it could also just be like, oh, this person is not a good friend. And you're rating people. And you have to join to be rated, and you have to, you know.
So it's you have to be rated to be berated?
Start shadow profiles.
Yeah,
for
I don't
you.
Think anybody would ever be more than like 50% eventually.
There is a website called like Don't Date Him Girl or something where you can talk about like bad relationships and you can look up whoever you're dating. But it's only for women, or it only rates men, or something like that.
Ooh, long before that, there was a website called whosarat.com, so that if you were like, if you were in any sort of shady business, and you know that somebody was known to rat on you or any of your business partners, and that included police officers and anybody that would narc to them, they could be listed on a website at whosarat.com. Perhaps the URL has changed since then. It's been quite some time. But,
I guess back to CEOs, would we rate them as, like, I guess, on a scale of, Bezos or Zuckerberg?
Oh, my God. Gates would be the good end. Gates would be benevolent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at this point.
This guy's worth eight Gates, I guess.
Yeah, well, Gates just, at the time, anyway, what made him so rich was taking advantage of IBM. Or,
Fucking IBM.
Having a good license. Like, oh, well, yeah, sure. We'll write your software, but we get to sell it to other people too, which was totally atypical of IBM at the time. They wanted mostly everything in-house, and they owned it and had all the patents and the copyrights of the code. But Microsoft said, we'll write your operating system, but we're licensing it to you.
Oh, the beginning of the licensing whore.
No, it wasn't. And also reserving the right to resell it on their own to third parties.
That's the license. Where this is, we own this and we can sell it to other people. Yeah. And
you're not purchasing this. You get to lease it.
Exactly. But IBM got a perpetual license, so they could have it forever.
But everybody still, else would not just them.
Exactly, not just them.
You want exclusivity, that's going to cost you an arm and a leg. Or at this point, just won't do it and make the profits themselves. Well, turned out in their favor. And now the World Health Organization is getting lots of donations from the Gates Organization. The Bill and Melinda Gates Organization, actually.
I think Elon Musk would be chaotic neutral, maybe.
No, oh, now we're going to Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, I think that would be a good... That's a
morality system.
Yeah.
Chaotic neutral for Elon Musk.
Yeah, little good, little evil.
So, like, Bill Gates is, like, lawful good, kind of nerdy, but, you know.
Depends on how you look at it.
Lawful? He
definitely follows...
Look, the courts tickled his genitals over and over, so I would say legally he did pretty good.
That's true.
So... lawful good, and then Elon Musk will be the chaotic neutral. The chaotic neutral. Okay.
So I guess Bezos and Zuckerberg are chaotic evil, neutral evil, what? Or I don't know.
Bezos is chaotic evil, and Zuckerberg would be lawful evil.
Yeah. Mm.
Because it's his law that everyone has to succumb to because you all submit to Facebook. So he's like the emperor. Okay, yeah. Lawful evil.
Well, it's very easy to badmouth billionaires.
And Steve Jobs is, well, he's just dead. So we don't have to worry about him.
Wow.
Just Tim Apple.
Tim Apple?
Tim Cook? Tim Apple. Our dear leader who referred to Tim Cook as Tim Apple because... why shouldn't a company be absolutely named after its CEO every year, you know? Why not?
Kaiser.
No, we force the CEOs Kuckel. To change their name to the company. I kind of like that idea.
Kaiser Cooker.
Beg pardon? You okay? You got something in your throat?
Kaiser.
But we digress. All right. Back to, like, wireless stuff.
Wait, what?
Back to wireless security.
Oh, wow, we're doing a show.
Whatnot.
Holy crap.
Yeah,
hey, everybody.
We're actually doing a show right now. All right, here's a nice piece of news from last month. Anybody who knows their stuff probably already knows about this, but there you go. TP-Link router bug lets attackers log in without passwords.
I heard about something similar happening to Ring Platform, too, where hackers were getting into their stuff, and they're starting to be considered legally liable because they weren't protecting their data quite so much. TP-Link, however, this sounds like a programming error.
It is. In fact, it is a buffer overflow error.
Mm. Oh.
So,
classic.
The classic.
And that error has been corrected in the most recent firmware updates for all of those devices. But
these are the devices that were affected. It's impacted some of its Archer routers. So if you have a TP-Link Archer router for your internet access, wireless internet access, go ahead and update that, please.
Like right now.
Otherwise, yeah, now. Do it now. Stop listening to us. Go do it now. Because it can be remotely taken over via a telnet connection.
Look, it doesn't matter how much the kids whine about not being able to get on Facebook for 20 minutes while you get things fixed. Just do it. This is your security that's at stake.
It shouldn't take 20 minutes. Like 10.
Well, we're assuming you take a coffee break and, you know, you read the instructions twice to make sure you know what you're doing.
From one dummy, you know, this is a dummy saying it. You also got always dummy proof, time it out for dummies. Like, you know, maybe 10 minutes for you, but
maybe
20, 30 minutes for somebody else.
But I think TP-Link has some pretty good firmware. So I think it's just you press a button that says,
firmware update.
Check it up, check whether it needs an update, and then TP-Link firmware does the rest. Okay. I'm assuming it's one button push because TP-Link's actually a good manufacturer.
Yeah, by the way, those TP-Links are readily able to take, LEDE or DDWRT, which are the open source versions of software that run routers. Good software.
The DDWRT is very, when's the last time it received any updates?
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the old one. Is it OpenWRT?
DDWRT is a different project.
That's
OpenWRT and LEED.
LEDE. Okay.
They've both merged again. They're the same.
So which what are they called now?
I'm pretty sure it's just OpenWRT again.
Okay, so
open.
You want to upgrade the software on your TP-Link router? You're going to probably get the latest version of OpenWRT.
Right.
And I know that some of the TP-Link routers are as easily flashable as you just upgrade the firmware to the new file.
Although honestly, I don't think this bug probably didn't affect.
No. So everybody that put the open source software on their routers is probably just fine right now. And everybody that hasn't done so should probably be thinking about putting some of this more sophisticated and powerful software on their routers.
Yeah, and if you don't, it's only a matter of time before some Chinese hacker sends an HTTP request containing a string that's longer than what your router expected for the password.
That's
and
what
then it just goes, oh, okay. Yeah, you're the admin. You're the root. You're admin now.
That's all it takes?
That's all it takes. It's a buffer overflow on a password check. Duh.
Well, it is a Chinese company.
Well, both of you, why you have to slam the Chinese?
Because they enslave people. They don't care about human rights, you know?
Oh, they do.
All right.
Yes, and if you're a Muslim, they send you to a re-education camp.
Oh, to learn.
Yes, to learn about their new life as a Chinese citizen.
That's the Uyghurs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Uyghurs.
I saw a documentary on that.
Not to get all political or nothing.
But they send them to jail.
Yeah,
so which is it? They send them to brainwashing camp, and then they send them into the factories to work the slave to make our iPhones. It's a great little circle.
Mm.
As long as our kids aren't involved, who cares?
I know. Not in my backyard.
Jeez.
Sorry.
Again, we digress.
Again, we get all jaded.
Hey, those kids are getting a good salary of about 5 cents a month, all right? Those kids are rich compared to their friends.
You might be right, actually. Everything?
Do we have it?
What?
We have anything else?
Like what?
Oh, no, I thought there was something Cody had over there.
Yeah.
Are you done talking about the...
What am I reading?
The router? You were just talking about the TP Link
stuff. Yeah, I'm done. That was a short article.
Oh.
it was a short informational PSA.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, how about this one? Cox Communications hit with a $1 billion verdict over music piracy.
Oh, yeah. That one is very interesting.
That's a federal court, too, so...
I do think it's a little bit ridiculous, but I don't know. I'm fingers crossed, optimistic that this might force ISPs to do an about-face and kind of want net neutrality.
Mm.
So that all these things can just fall onto the person doing it and that they're not... Because they're being an information service as opposed to telecommunications.
Oh, it's a utility. Like a utility, that it would be the person's...
Right. It's like if...
So are you directly tying this to the recent actions taken by Ajit Pai of the FCC and turning all ISPs into information companies?
Pai is... Anyway, terrible. Terrible for consumers. Great for companies.
I just want to make that clear. Okay.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Pai, the chair of the FCC now is... Please remove that man, Mr. Trump. But you're not going to do it. Anyway, it could have a positive effect of, while I think the ruling is a bit ridiculous, $1 billion, what was
yes.
it?
For billions.
It's like $1 billion. What did
billion
you just say, Joe?
Settlement.
Yeah. It looks like $100,000 in a fence or something like.
They were fined for their users having 10,000 infringing recordings shared over their network, and they were fined at $100,000 per item.
Right. So it's $100,000 a song. They pointed out 10,000 songs or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's $1 billion. But, you know, if that holds up, because obviously Comcast is going to appeal, and it's going to go through two or three layers of appeal. We might see this in the Supreme Court.
It's Cox Communications, not Comcast.
I apologize. Yes, thanks. So we might see this at the Supreme Court in 10 years from now, because it's going to be a long time in the courts.
Yeah, I think they should get a discount on that, because a lot of the downloads were Coldplay.
Yeah, nobody says that the songs are actually worth a damn.
No, and they're going to argue that and try to get the fee reduced. But, you know...
They should also have some fair harbor protection from the DMCA, shouldn't they?
But they didn't try hard enough. Cox and I believe Comcast and a couple other ISPs tried this six strikes program where if they caught you getting doing illegal downloads because they received a notice from RIPA or whoever, the recording industry. RIAA, sorry. The Recording Industry
Association
of America. There you go.
In stereo.
When they received a takedown request, after so many takedown requests matching to a certain IP address, they would hijack your – they would HTTP intercept your communications from out of your router, and you would see this never-closing pop-up window on your browser every time you tried to connect to the internet.
How annoying.
Saying you have, like, done something wrong.
And shame
this is
on
your,
you.
This is your first warning. And so this thing would pop up on your – when you open your browser.
That's after the sixth time they catch
No,
you?
No. They do this before
the
sixth.
One.
This is like – they do this a few times.
Interesting.
And then eventually they cut you off entirely. But they only really cut off like a handful of people.
Because that's also cutting off their profits.
Exactly. It made Ars Technica. I saw an article. But they had cut off like two or three people maybe in about 5 years ago, and then they just cut it off. They just canceled the program altogether.
So would you say piracy is profitable for the low-end businesses on the ISP scale?
Of course, because they're selling internet subscriptions if somebody's using their internet subscription. And
so in a way, it's assisting local businesses.
Sure.
Cool.
local pirates. But but anyway, so ISPs have argued forever that because they offer DNS, which also your operating system can offer. And
there's also free DNS and other versions
free DNS,
of it. Yep.
For what people don't, that's a domain name lookup. It turns Google.com into something like 104.63. Whatever, you know, some.
And make sure your address is pointed at the right servers all the time.
Yeah, it makes it easier to remember, but that's not a thing that is a really value add to internet service. That it should
until
be really
you
good.
Have hackers DDoS attack our DNS servers and basically shut down internet service for the Northeast for quite some time. Okay. On that note, I just want to fade in and let people know that they are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM, music for open ears. And we are going to take our break at the moment, and we will be right back with the bio break.
The checkout counter at the local grocery store. I was only passing by, but a paper caught my eye, and I learned a few things I never knew before. It said, your pet may be an extraterrestrial. It said, the ghost of Elvis is living in my den. You can learn to cope with stress, and you can beat the IRS, and the incredible frog boy is on the loose again.
Okay, and we are back on the Thingularity radio program. And we just got done talking about Cox Communications being spanked by the FCC and the federal government. And now we're going to move on to something a little more local and a little more interesting. Yet I'm reading this from the Daily Mail UK. It's nice to hear about your local hometown across the pond. World's oldest forest dating back 386 million years to the Age of Fish, discovered in an abandoned quarry near New York. Well, it says near New York, but it's actually in New York, and I know this rock quarry. It's off of Route 145 in Cairo. Thought to be up to 65 feet tall, they had found fossilized roots of trees found at the bottom of the rock quarry.
Very cool.
All right.
All right.
Okay. I believe there, so. Sir Isaac Newton once did a calculation that the Earth is only 6,000 years old.
Well, he also liked to do things like add in an extra color because 7 was an awesome number. So, you know what? Screw that and screw indigo. But, yeah, this is it's an ancient forest. And the forest would have been at its peak during the Devonian period. So that just makes it...
Otherwise known as the Age of Fishes.
I think we've established that.
Yeah, man.
And that's because the majority of life on Earth was in the oceans.
I'm looking at a map right now. You wouldn't even recognize the continents because they're all underwater. The shelves are all, the continental shelves are all underwater or put together in their jigsaw puzzle way. You got Gondwana here, Euramerica, Kazakhstania.
Oh, these are the different supercontinents?
Pretty much, yeah.
Cool.
It looks completely different.
Yeah.
Look it
so
up, people.
This same spot on Earth would have morphed into, like, you know, basically touching the Alps at the same point in time with other things all mixed around it.
Be hard to say. These are very rough illustrations, to say the least, trying to theorize about what the Earth's continents look like, trying to reverse plate tectonics to 380 million years
ago. Well, there's the Fred and Barney.
But they found the same kind of rocks in New York City as they have, like, in Africa. So that's how they do that.
Ah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then you line up the magnetic signatures of the rocks, and you can tell where they were when their magma cooled. So that's the big signature that shows us how things have moved over time, because you can see the magnetic signatures of the rocks lining up in different ways back through time as you shift the tectonic plates around. Hmm. But, yeah. Now,
basically, a good general idea of what it looked like or would have looked like.
And to think this was in a quarry.
Yeah, so that we use like as a dump regularly on free garbage day.
So,
I'm not kidding.
A couple hundred years ago, they were,
pile up our
mining
laundry.
Out this ancient forest fossil.
Yeah.
Destroying who knows what, right? They didn't know what was underfoot.
No, not at all. The whole thing is just one big, giant, like, rock pit. And it's kind of hard to destroy things that are that hard.
When you're mining rock, I imagine if you have the equipment there, you can destroy it quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. And
that hasn't happened there for, like, what? I don't know how long. 100.
What? 100
or
construction?
Actual
quarry. Bluestone quarrying. Was it
bluestone? Oh, no. We're talking, like, 50, 60 years. Like, not that long ago.
Really?
Concrete. I don't know if this is verified, but I heard stories from my uncle that lives here forever that... basically, they were digging out the rock quarry, and they were going deep, and eventually they struck a spring, which filled up the quarry so quickly that there should be still a crane and some other equipment down at the bottom of the two lakes that are in this quarry.
Oh, my gosh.
But this quarry's up. People have stocked it with fish. People go there for a lot of recreation. They ride around the outside of it on ATVs, and then when the lakes freeze over, they tear them up with snowmobiles. And this is what we do with the world's oldest forest.
Green County.
Fill it up with garbage and have it traveled to the transfer station.
Yeah. We beat the prior record by 3 million years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that was the Gilboa forest.
In your face,
fossils.
Gilboa.
our neighbors to the slight northwest.
The forest was here longer than it was there. Yeah.
Now.
It was fossilized at the right time.
I was going to say.
That's true.
I didn't know if we actually had a claim to the quarry, but I know it's like the first 26 feet or so is actually all Canadian dirt. But this quarry goes way deeper than that.
Must.
Yeah.
Canadian dirt? You mean like brought by the glaciers?
Yes, the difference between the tectonic plate shifting and this part of the world being part of, say, the Alps way long ago is different than just the glaciers that slid across the landscape, right, piling up dirt, and it literally just picked up a whole ton of dirt from Canada and dropped it on us. So, like, yes, but almost the first 30 feet down in most spaces is,
yeah, isn't Long Island considered, most of Long Island considered a glacial moraine?
Yes.
Yes, which means one day it shall return to the ocean where it belongs.
Ooh.
Wow.
I mean, it's not far off according to climate science, so.
I hope that wasn't considered anti-Semitic.
That's not.
What?
I didn't get
it. It might be now.
Yeah, exactly. You brought it up.
You said it is.
On a more recent biological note, from around the area of the Caucasus Mountains,
Caucasus,
to, what is it, China?
China, North Korea.
China, North Korea. They have a massive swine flu problem, which is killing a lot of their pigs.
They have to be put down.
So a quarter of the world's domestic pigs have died this year as swine flu rampages across Eurasia.
And this is still a communicable form of swine flu to humans, or is it just like some other kind that just sticks to the pigs?
It might be just one that sticks to the pigs. I don't know. I'll have to click on the article to go into more detail. But it's deadly enough to pigs that half the pigs in China have been killed off. So they're either, it's like, what do you call it? Not slash and burn, but scorched earth. A scorched earth strategy where they're killing the pigs to prevent the further spread of the disease.
So what you're saying is buy pork futures now.
You know,
because the price is going to skyrocket.
I'm going to tangent into something rather interesting that was on, this is an Ars Technica article.
Is it bacon?
No, but it's about swine flu in China. It's gotten to the point that apparently competitors are people who are wholesale buyers of pork and then resell it and process it and like that. You know, so they buy direct from the farmers. They've been dropping swine flu on planes or by, like, dropping infected pigs or something like that.
Is it chemical warfare?
It's chemical warfare because it's bio warfare. They're taking infected pigs and then, like, inserting them into farms because they know that if swine flu gets detected in any of the pigs, they can buy the meat up cheaper, and it's unlikely to get any people sick, so they can just sell it in the market anyway.
That's devious.
Oh, my God.
And what happened is this one farm had – so they're using drones to, like, literally drop pigs and stuff into farms. So this one farm
special
got –
special delivery.
This farm set up scrambling technology for radar and GPS tracking. And
so they couldn't drop pigs.
So the drones would stop working. But the Chinese government caught on when the national airline started having trouble flying over this land owned by the farm. And their radar would stop working, and their GPS and their autopilot all shut down.
Oh, they're
and
so doing they multi-spectrum scrambling. Just
yeah, they're just scrambling.
It out there.
Yeah,
and then their surface-to-air missile launched. Not really.
And so
I'm making that up.
It's China, they got, you never know.
But that's how bad the biological warfare has gotten with swine flu. They're literally trying to infect pigs. Wholesale distributors are trying to infect farmers' pigs so that they can buy the product cheaper. But they'll still sell it on the open market because they're willing to take the risk that it's very unlikely to affect a person once it's processed.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Apparently, pigs can fly with the assistance of drones.
The article doesn't mention that it's communicable, but there's no vaccine that they've been able to make up thus far to any viral components to vaccinate the pigs against.
Okay, on that lovely bit of fun, we're going to switch on over to a little something different. The Historical Scientific Achievements for January by Corey.
Okay, January 1st, 1818, Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus by Mary Shelley was published in London. 1915, Bayer Pharmaceuticals in Germany made aspirin tablets available for the first time. 1946, based off ideas by John Antonisoff, John Maltzley and J. Esper Eckert finished building the ENIAC, the first U.S. computer.
The most giant computer.
Yeah, because it weighed
in
over 60,000 pounds and contained more than 18,000 vacuum tubes.
Lots of switches and buttons, and it crashed a lot, apparently.
I got to say, without Bear's achievement, it wouldn't have enabled America to undergo its cheeseburger addiction, cheeseburger and big soda addiction.
No, a bear?
What, so that we could survive all the heart attacks?
See, they invented this after they invented heroin. Just Bear invented heroin.
They marketed,
yeah.
Okay, that wasn't a joke. That was serious.
As a torture.
See how effective opioids are at killing pain. I mean, heroin was the natural one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's concentrated
opium. It wasn't strong enough.
Unfortunately, it's also great at killing people too.
Yeah. Well, I think also put it in tablet form, cut down on the stomach bleeding and other problems.
Ooh, oh, fun.
For the aspirin, you mean?
Yeah, for the aspirin.
No, the ENIAC.
I thought you were talking about the heroin.
We swallow some ENIAC today. Call me in the morning. Okay.
If you can.
January 5th, 1933, construction on the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco began. January 6th, 1954, a New York Times article included news that C.A. Swanson and Sons of Omaha were about to introduce a $1 frozen dinner of gravy-smothered turkey with sides of green peas and mashed sweet potatoes.
That's because there was a turkey surplus, and they did not know what to do with all of these turkeys. And so they looked at, like, the MRE rations and figured, okay, let's put these together. That's why the first TV dinner was a turkey dinner.
They looked at MREs and thought that something good could come of this.
Well, at least it's frozen.
I mean, today, like, you know, fast forward 100 years, everything's great. But back then, those K rations.
K rations.
Yeah. But turkey sounds good.
Hey, we got M&M's out of that. Oh. The MREs thing.
M&M's.
Sold.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, January 7th, 1930, francium, or FR, was the last naturally occurring element to be identified. It was found by Marguerite Perret, a technician for Marie Curie. The original symbol was actually FA. In January 8th, 1790, in his State of the Union address, President George Washington urged Congress to support the introduction of new inventions. Within days, the House set up a committee to draft a patent statute. January 10th, 1949, RCA introduced the 7-inch diameter 45 RPM record, or the single.
The speed wars begin.
1955.
We're not talking about amphetamines.
1955, Inherit the Wind, the play loosely dramatizing the events of the Scopes Monkey Trial, debuted at the National Theater on Broadway. January 11th, 1922, 14-year-old Leonard Thompson was the first person to receive an insulin injection treatment for diabetes. January 13th, 1854, Anthony Foss of Philadelphia was granted the first patent for an accordion.
To the detriment of many people's ears.
But to the great benefit of a certain Al Yankovic. 1957, Wham-O developed the first Frisbee based on a company representative's idea after he saw Frisbee Pie Co. truck drivers showing Yale students how to throw pie tins in the air.
I just want to throw in that you got that backwards. Weird Al was the greatest thing to happen to the accordion, not the other way around.
Oh, yeah, right. Wow.
Sorry, please continue.
No, I totally agree. January 14th, 1794, Elizabeth Hogg Bennett, in an unanesthetized operation by her husband, Dr. Jesse Bennett, after a local physician refused, was the first woman in the U.S. to give successful childbirth via cesarean section.
Whoa. Unanesthetized?
Refused. Yeah. How do you stare at a woman that's about to, like, just not... What?
What year was this?
It was 1794.
Oh, okay, well.
Yeah. They were doing it to pigs and horses for years before that.
So that was, like, ether or something. Yeah, what would have been the
Yeah, and I think it may have been like they didn't have anything to give her.
Whiskey!
Well, opiates and alcohol existed at the time. There was no ether until, like... Yeah.
They might have had laudanum.
Man, I remember
they might
reading...
have had laudanum, tincture of...
opium.
Oh, yeah. They just keep stores of it on the farm.
There was something like, on the farm, when I researched, it was like a local physician refused to do it, and like her husband, you know, had to do it instead, you know, himself. I mean, he was a physician himself, but...
Wow. Oh, well, good for that. He wasn't just like a butcher.
But she survived, so...
Well, that's good.
January 19th, 1825, the first U.S. patent for canned food storage was issued to Ezra Daggett and his nephew Thomas Kinsett of New York City.
It took decades before a can opener was invented. True.
It's true. I know, I just always laugh.
What do they do, just smack it against a rock?
Pop it open with a knife.
Oh, the fry method. Unfortunately, no Zoidberg around to clip it off.
No. You just take the whole can, stick it on top of a heated up stovetop, and wait for it to open itself. Yeah. Don't do that at home. Don't do that at home, anyone.
January 20, 1633, Galileo left Florence to face the Inquisition in Rome. January 21, 1790, before the National Assembly of Paris, Dr. Joseph Ignace Guillotin proposed a more humane method of execution he called the guillotine.
Very creative guy.
Yeah. Very humble.
Cutting people's heads off. Now, Galileo, he went to face the Inquisition and came away with a slap on the wrist. Right?
Well,
after several months of, interrogation. I'm sure they weren't doing any kind of torture they gave to other people, other heathens, but still.
No.
January 24th, 1848, the California Gold Rush was initiated when James W. Marshall found gold at Sutter's Mill in Coloma.
Leading to a lot of disease and desperation.
If only the Donner Party had waited about a year or two, all those trails would have been opened by the 49ers.
Yeah. Well, it gave us plenty of setting and plots for future Westerns and Lassie movies.
So in the end, it was worth it.
isn't Cannibal the musical also set at that time? Oh, such a great...
Worth the admission price alone, absolutely.
I mean, you only need to watch it for the first 15 minutes to really get what your money's worth.
And then there's the classic Frontline, I think it was Frontline documentary that is ultra-depressing. Anyway. January 27th, 1948, Wire Recording Corporation of America began selling the first magnetic wire recorder, the WireWave, for $149.50. Basically, this is the first tape recorder. 1926, John Logie Baird gave the first public demonstration of a television system in London. January 30, 1868, Charles Darwin's Variation of Animals and Plants Under Domestication was published in response to criticisms of his theory of evolution.
Take that, haters.
January 31st, 1950, almost 4 months after learning the USSR had conducted its first atomic explosion, President Harry S. Truman announced a program to develop the hydrogen bomb. And 1958, 4 months after Sputnik, the launch of Explorer 1 ushered the United States into the space age.
Just chasing those Russians. Just like we're
every
chasing
time.
China. Or is it China we're chasing to Mars now? They're starting to send probes.
I think it's China and
things.
India. What? India's got a space program.
Yeah.
Whatever. Sticks a great big bug up our butt just to get us over there.
Because, once we beat the Russians to the moon, the space program pretty much got put, or at least hasn't been up till then.
Do we ever do anything without the expressed intent of just shoving it in someone's face?
Well, I mean, the whole point of getting to the moon is to prove that you can put a missile anywhere on Earth.
Yeah.
I mean,
beg pardon?
Getting to the moon was more about the Cold War. If you could, part of the reason that the satellite, having a satellite in space was a big deal is because that shows you, if you can put something in space and orbiting the Earth, you can also theoretically drop it down anywhere you want on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that's, it's like showing power for war.
Yeah. So
war drove that.
Once China has a moon base in place, do you mean that they're going to be able to drop rotten pigs on us from any point in time?
Rotten pigs.
Well, that could be, but no, that's irrelevant.
No,
we'll just
buy that. We'll just buy that.
All the big nations can send a missile anywhere on Earth at this point in time. But that was its significance in 1960s.
We didn't have intercontinentals back then.
Right. ICBMs didn't.
They weren't
exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, now they
had to be really high up.
Now they just hang out in submarines all over the globe, just waiting for one country's dead man switch to get flipped.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, putting something on the moon, you're like, okay, this is cool. It looks good for national pride or whatever, but the underlying message is, this is a missile.
And we can put it anywhere we want.
Wow.
Bend over. Okay, all right. That brings to a conclusion, I guess, our show. Does anybody have any last-minute things to throw in? Any hellos to family they want to give? No? We're good.
Does our NASA grant recipient want to say anything?
Oh, I could give like a quick update.
You got 1 minute. Go.
1 minute. All right. Well, we have two projects. One is called Duet. That's Dual Use Exoplanet Telescope.
Oh. So you guys got it.
So we're searching for exoplanets.
Okay, you got 2 minutes.
That project is going very well. We have a phase one grant from NIAC, which is a one-year grant to basically experiment and give a report at the end of it all, saying you should give us more money to keep experimenting and developing this further into something that's a viable product.
The purpose of all research.
Right, not a product. It's
something we could put into space.
Something we could put into space that would maybe go on a satellite would be, you know,
awesome.
A great thing. That would be pretty awesome. And the other telescope we have is we're building two telescopes for NASA. That the other one, it's a bigger grant. It is already in its second phase. The original project was about 10 years old, but it finally got a second grant. That one is going a little less well, but we have one more year on that one. That's a two-year project. So our one-year project looks like we will definitely get more funding to continue for two more years.
Awesome.
Because it's been going great.
Congratulations. Nice.
Yeah, thank you. And the other project, which is a whole sky survey. So Duet looks at a sun and the resolution is so good that we can actually see a planet, not just see the dimming of the light when it passes in front of the star, which is how exoplanets are being discovered now. We can actually subtract out the light from the sun. In theory, we haven't actually looked
at it. So can you tell things like composition of atmosphere or something?
Well, that's
like that?
The dual use part. So it's magnifying, but because our optics are essentially like a prism, we use a special optics that are proprietary to 3 DeWitt LLC, by the way. You get spectroscopy out of it. So.
Oh, cool.
Awesome.
That's the second use.
Cool.
Great.
Well, then we'll be able to tell all sorts of things about the planets, like what it's made of.
Correct.
And from a far distance. I like it.
Yes.
Okay, that brings to an end the Thingularity radio program for January 2020. You have been listening to the Catskill Makers Syndicate. We have our biologist, Cody. We have Kurt, the contraption commander. We have mathematics expert, Albert Flores. Audio technician, Brian X, the cat wrangler. Our historian, Cody McCaskland. McCaskland?
Say the word. Corey.
You got it, Jake.
Why?
One day I will get it.
2 months in a row.
Yeah, it's twice in a row now.
Hey, okay, I'm going to train. I'll train, I promise, for it next time, people. Comms officer, Professor Von Mothersbaugh. Basket weaving engineer, Sam Owen. Wizard of the Fiber, Ben Matthews. Those two not with us tonight. And yours truly, Mr. Conductor. This has been a Thingularity radio program. Remember, there is no such thing as a failed experiment. It's more than two computers.